I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, Deal or No Deal? 2 days of talks for a ceasefire between Hamas and Israel have wrapped up. What's next on the path to peace? Economic plan. Vice President Harris is in North Carolina touting her new economic proposals. How the Trump team is responding. Torching the Olympics. Why a group defending Christians in Egypt is taking aim at the IOC. And digging deep into history. A closer look at the close ties between fountains and the city of Rome. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Stephen of Hungary. Our top story tonight, we begin with the election battleground state of North Carolina. That is where Vice President Kamala Harris laid out her economic plan aimed at addressing Americans' worries about money. Harris trying to blunt Donald Trump's attacks after he called her, quote, a radical California liberal who broke the economy. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, good evening to you. Vice President Kamala Harris talking money and dollars in Raleigh, North Carolina today. This as year-over-year inflation reached its lowest level in more than 3 years. But food prices are still 21% above where they were just 3 years ago.
In Raleigh, North Carolina, Vice President Kamala Harris discusses tax breaks and lowering costs.
Together, we will build what I call an opportunity economy.
Included on her list of proposals, $25,000 in down payment help for certain first-time home buyers, expanding the child tax credit to up to $3,600, and $6,000 for children in their first year of life. But many of the changes would require the approval of lawmakers. After years of polling showing that Americans are worried about inflation, Harris also wants a federal ban on price gouging on groceries.
Many of the big food companies are seeing their highest profits in two decades. And while many grocery chains pass along these savings, others still aren't.
The Trump campaign reacting immediately, blasting Harris, saying Comrade Kamala goes full communist, and adding, it's hard to overstate how disastrous of an idea it is to let D.C. bureaucrats dictate the price of groceries in cities, suburbs, and rural communities across the country, dismantling necessary supply and demand signals of the free market and ultimately leading to higher prices for consumers. Meanwhile, Trump running mate J.D. Vance appearing in another battleground state, Wisconsin, speaking at the Milwaukee Police Association, and afterward holding a news conference, confident in a victory come November.
Right. We have a little bit less than 90 days to make our case to the American people, to persuade them that our policies are going to make their lives better. And again, I think you contrast the failed leadership of Kamala Harris with the peace and prosperity of Donald Trump. I don't think there's any doubt we're going to win this race.
For Harris, her plans constituting the first major policy proposal she has released since President Joe Biden, seen here today headed for Philadelphia, bowed out of the race.
Now, ahead of next week's Democratic National Convention in Chicago, the Harris campaign is kicking off hundreds of events across battleground states, calling it a weekend of action. And tomorrow afternoon in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, Donald Trump will be holding a rally. And then on Monday, Trump will be in York, Pennsylvania. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
As former President Donald Trump remains on the campaign trail, the U.S. Secret Service is stepping up its safety protocols in order to protect him. Bulletproof glass will now be used to protect the former president at his outdoor rallies. An official with the agency told NBC News that they will also increase staffing and technology. The Republican candidate has not held any outdoor rallies since the assassination attempt on his life last month. All right, now to the Middle East. International mediators wrapped up a second day of discussions on a ceasefire in Gaza. The White House says talks were, quote, serious and constructive.
We are closer than we've ever been. I don't want to jinx anything, but as my grandfather said, with the grace of God, good little neighbors, a lot of luck, we may have something. But we're not there yet. But it's much, much closer than it was 3 days ago. So keep your fingers crossed.
Authorities say the death toll in Gaza is now past 40,000. Talks for a truce in Gaza and a release of hostages are set to continue next week in Qatar. Well, Ukraine is back in the news as its forces continue their offensive in Russia's Kursk region, now nearing 2 weeks. President Biden released a new $125 million weapons package, and Congress will again have to deal with further U.S. aid to Ukraine when lawmakers return in September. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now in the studio with more on that story. Eric.
Well, good evening, Tracy. Yes, Ukraine's latest military successes have once again brought up the question about further U.S. aid. It's an issue that deeply divides Congress. You may recall Congress passed a massive foreign aid package back in April, including billions for Ukraine. Supporters like Senators Lindsey Graham and Richard Blumenthal just got back from a trip from Ukraine and say we must continue to help fund the fight.
Bold, brilliant, beautiful. Keep it up. Let these people fight. Give them weapons they need to win a war they can't afford to lose.
Senator Blumenthal said he hopes the visit will send a message that U.S. support for Ukraine is paying off.
The breakthrough in Kursk on that front is historic. It is a seismic breakthrough. Good news. Big news.
Other lawmakers cite different motivations for Ukraine's insertion into Russia.
What the Ukrainians very clearly are trying to do right now is impose additional costs on Vladimir Putin, because what we know, absolutely know, without a doubt about Vladimir Putin is that he will not stop his aggression until the costs outweigh the benefits. And so far, that has not happened.
Retired General Wesley Clark says Ukraine's forces should keep going and use U.S.-supplied long-range missiles to go after targets deeper in Russia.
Go after the airfields, go after the production facilities for these glide bombs, and take the heat off Ukraine, put it on Putin, and that's the shortest, best path to resolving this conflict successfully.
But there are many lawmakers who disagree. Senator J.D. Vance, Republican vice presidential nominee and critic of further American aid to Ukraine, issued a statement, quote, "The United States is spread too thin, and that argument, I think, is winning the American people. And it is slowly winning the Senate, but it's not going to happen overnight."
Well, the debate is far from over. Senators Graham and Blumenthal say that they plan to introduce the Stand With Ukraine Act, which would make the existing security agreement between the U.S. and Ukraine permanent. They add that the agreement would strengthen America's commitment to helping Ukraine for the next president. Tracy?
All right. Thank you so much, Eric. Well, Ukraine's invasion is the biggest foreign incursion into Russia since World War II. It is a big gamble, but it could impose a real blow to President Putin. This was the scene in Russia's Kursk region today. Local authorities are in the process of evacuating people from their homes as Ukrainian troops move closer. But as Kyiv makes gains in Kursk, Russia is striking back. Forces have captured more territory around Ukraine's Donetsk region, an important logistical hub. All right, for more, let's bring in the founder of the Ukraine Freedom Project, Stephen Moore. He lives in Kyiv. Stephen, great to be with you again. So let's begin with Ukraine's incursion into Russia's Kursk region. President Zelensky has claimed that his troops have full control over the town of Sudzha. Do you think this changes the dynamic of the war?
Oh, and yeah. Yes, completely. It's super exciting. We here in Kyiv call it an invasion. So the Ukrainians have invaded Russia, which is the first time that's happened since World War II. And it's the first time that a non-nuclear power has invaded a nuclear power. And, you know, we're 10 days into it and there's been no missiles. So it does completely change the dynamic. You know, Putin is always saber-rattling with nukes, and it scares off policymakers in D.C. And makes them hyper cautious. But, you know, these red lines that Putin puts up are, you know, just kind of lines in the sand. So this really changes the equation because, you know, everyone here in Kyiv has a spring in their step. You know, we had Shahed missiles come in last night, and you know, they're a little bit more tolerable because we know the Russians are suffering as well.
Yeah, and as you know, Russia has rerouted units after Ukraine's incursion. Why do you think they were so slow to respond?
I think Russia is a kind of a paper tiger. They've shown themselves to be, they're Soviet era. They're slow. You know, there's a reason the Soviet Union fell, and they're still using that military doctrine. So it is difficult for them to respond to new things. They get pretty good. You put them in one place, and they do the same thing over and over and over again, and they get pretty good at it. But surprises like this, they can't deal with it well.
Yeah, and as for the use of U.S. weapons, spokespeople from the White House, the Pentagon, and also the State Department, they won't officially confirm, you know, whether they're being used or not. I want to get your thoughts on that, Stephen. What do you know?
Yeah, no, there's visual confirmation of Strikers, American-made Striker assault vehicles being used in this. I've been told they've hauled in a howitzer, an M777 howitzer, U.S.-made. So there are U.S. weapons being used right now inside Russia.
Stephen, almost out of time here, but quickly, I mean, do you see an end to this war anytime soon?
Well, I think what people are looking at is that regardless of who gets into the White House next year, you're probably going to see a call for a negotiated peace. And so now Ukrainians have land to bargain with. You know, will Putin pull out of Donbass and Crimea and get Kursk back? I think that's a really interesting strategy on that their part. They're shown to be winning now, and they're showing what we've all known, which is that when you give them the weapons they need and let them use it most effectively, then they win. And so I think that this really changes the game. And if there is a peace negotiation, Ukraine will be negotiating from a position of strength.
Well, we're going to leave it right there. Stephen, thank you so much for coming on, for all your insights. I always appreciate it.
Oh, always great to be with you. Thanks, Tracy.
Authorities say the stabbing of a Catholic priest in Ireland is being investigated as a possible terror incident. Reports say Father Paul Murphy, a military chaplain, was stabbed multiple times outside of an army barracks in Galway. The 50-year-old sustained serious injuries. A 16-year-old suspect has been arrested. Well, Thailand officially has a new prime minister, and it's a job that runs in her family. The country's parliament elected Pei Tung Tarn Shinawatra to lead the nation. She follows in the footsteps of her father and her aunt, both former leaders of the South Asian nation. She will become Thailand's second female prime minister and, at the age of 37, its youngest leader. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including infectious disease. Health departments are monitoring Mpox. And as students prepare to return to campus this fall, will more pro-Palestinian protests take schools by storm? We have analysis. Hurricane Ernesto is set to make landfall in Bermuda today. The Category 2 storm will strengthen as it moves towards the tiny British territory. Life-threatening and strong winds are expected, and residents and shelters are rushing to make preparations. Public transportation is no longer in service. Well, Pakistan has identified its first case of Mpox, formerly known as monkeypox, this year, right after the World Health Organization declared it spread a global health emergency. Officials in Pakistan say they are still looking into the case to learn more about which variant it is. The Africa CDC says cases are up 160% compared to this time last year. Mpox belongs to the same family of viruses as smallpox, however, causes milder symptoms like fever, chills, and body aches. A number of major colleges here in the United States will welcome students back on campus on Monday. The occasion brings excitement for another school year, but also fears of renewed pro-Palestinian demonstrations that could mirror the disruptive protests that swept campuses nationwide during the spring. According to NBC, some 2,000 protesters were arrested across the U.S. from April 17th to May 2nd alone. And for analysis, let's bring in Charisse Trump, executive director of Speech First, an organization committed to free speech on college campuses. Charisse, great to have you back on. We had mentioned the turmoil in the spring across the country. What's your assessment on how administrators handled the situation overall back then?
Yeah, there's been a number of lessons learned on campuses over the last handful of months, especially after this spring semester where you had the encampments where there was multiple violations of the law, where there was trespassing, vandalism, and actual extreme violence and harassment and discrimination taking place on campuses around the country. And the administrators and presidents failed to act, failed to stop the anti-Semitism that was taking place. And we see consequences now of what happens when that happens. You lose donors. Major donors spoke out and pulled their money and their funding from the universities. Congress brought in a number of the presidents of the universities to testify and explain their actions and their behavior. And we saw a number of resignations of presidents of very prestigious universities. So I think what's going to happen now is you're going to see a lot of universities trying to turn this around in the fall, trying to implement more rules and regulations and actually enforce them. Because it's not legal and never has been to discriminate against Jewish students. However, the university administrators were very okay with this happening over the last two semesters. So they're going to actually try to maybe make it look like they're not doing that this time.
Yeah, and Charisse, over the summer, the protests and demonstrations seemed to die down considerably. Why do you think that is?
Well, there's not a lot of students on campus over the summer. A lot of them go home. Summer is a very quiet time on college campuses. But we did see a lot of, kind of legal questions answered. There was a lawsuit against the University of California in Los Angeles recently for an actual Jewish exclusion zone on campus where students were barring Jewish students from entering libraries, entering study areas, or other areas of the quad, just merely based on the fact that they were Jewish. This is obviously a clear sign of discrimination on the basis of ethnic origin as well as religion. And the judge actually said that this was so unimaginable and so abhorrent to our constitutional guarantee of freedom of religion that he made it very clear. He said, this cannot happen. And so that was a federal judge ruling on that case against UCLA. We're still waiting to see if UCLA will appeal. We also just recently saw the Columbia president, President Shafiq, step down for failing to protect Jewish students on her campus. So you're seeing, again, there's been some activity over the summer with regards to resignations and lawsuits. And there's a number of investigations still that yet to go unanswered from the Department of Education, Office of Civil Rights, where they've been investigating a number of these schools for Title VI violations against Jewish students. So we are seeing a lot of lawsuits. And I think, like I said, the lessons have been learned, hopefully, and that the fall we'll see administrators have to crack down on this, even if they don't want to.
Charisse, really quickly, I'm almost out of time here, but what's your sense? I mean, what are you hearing about the climate on college campuses, that is, this coming semester?
Yeah, I think there's a real concern for free speech. That's obviously what our organization, Speech First, focuses primarily on. Title IX is being implemented this month. That's a whole other topic. The Biden administration has rewritten the rules to throw out pretty much all of the free speech protections under Title IX. And so there's a real risk of students being accused of sexual harassment just for merely saying that, that not using someone's preferred pronoun or not, admitting that the or not stating that a man can become a woman. And so there's real concerns there with speech. But also with these protests, I think we see a lot of, a lot of students putting encampments up and going around campus and vandalizing. Those are not forms of speech. And I think it's really important the schools take these opportunities to teach students what speech is protected under the First Amendment and what conduct is not protected. Real crimes, real vandalism, real harassment and discrimination, those are not protected forms of speech. So to reduce it down to say it's a free speech situation actually is untrue. And I think it's up to the universities to really educate students about that.
Well, Charisse, thank you so much for weighing in. We always appreciate it.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, Left Out, why a Christian community in Egypt is asking for help from the Olympic Organizing Committee. Plus, a look at some of the breathtaking fountains of Rome and their significance in the history of the church. Campaign event focused on organizing Catholic support for Vice President Kamala Harris was canceled at the last minute. The Catholics for Harris Walz National Organizing Call was originally scheduled for last night. The website Catholics for Kamala also went offline yesterday. Organizers say the event may take place after next week's Democratic convention. An advocacy group for Christians in Egypt is calling for an investigation into the makeup of the country's Olympic team at the recently concluded Summer Games. Coptic Solidarity says of Egypt's 154-member squad in Paris, only one athlete was Christian. The group is calling on the IOC to investigate what it says is clear discrimination against Christian athletes, a violation of the Olympic Charter. Around 10% of Egyptians are Coptic Christian. And joining us now is Samuel Tedros, advisor to the Philos Project, which started an online petition against the discrimination of Christian athletes in Egypt. Samuel, great to be with you again. First off, remind us about the Coptic Christians and why they historically have been discriminated against in Egypt.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure, as always. The Copts are, in a sense, the original inhabitants of Egypt, the descendants of the pharaohs, those Egyptians who, when the message of Christ came at the hands of Saint Mark, the evangelist, converted to Christianity. Egypt became one of the centers of Christianity back in late antiquity, one of the great churches, with Rome, Alexandria, Antioch, and Constantinople being the, in a sense, the leaders of that Christian world, and continued to be a center of learning. Obviously, Islam came to Egypt. The Arab and Muslim armies invaded in 641. And we've seen, of course, from that date until today, the decline of Christianity. But the Copts remain. They're not an artifact. They're living people. They are the largest Christian community in the Middle East, representing over half of the Christians of the entire region.
And I want to talk now, Samuel, about the allegations of discrimination at the Olympics. But these charges, they actually go beyond the Paris Olympics. I know your petition says the faithful are also excluded from the national soccer team. Tell us more about this situation for the Christian athletes in Egypt.
So this is a systematic exclusion that is happening. It's happening at the lower levels. It's happening at the high levels. Of course, Christians used to be part of Egypt's sport activities. In fact, some of the earliest Olympic medals that Egypt ever won were won by Coptic athletes that participated representing Egypt back in the 1920s and 30s. Prior to 1952, Copts won over 20% of all the medals that Egypt won, despite their numbers in the country being much less. But today we see this exclusion, not just today, for since basically 1952, Copts have been excluded. Whether it is trying to join a soccer team and you play in the playoffs or the tryouts and you do well and they ask you for your name and you say, my name is Mina or Joseph or whatever Christian name, and you're automatically told you're not welcome any longer. We have so many cases of people telling these stories. So not just at the national level, even locally, the Egyptian league, soccer league, with thousands of players at all of its levels, does not include the Christians among its ranks. The only Christian that represented Egypt in the Paris Olympics and before it in the Tokyo Olympics was a female athlete as part of the synchronized swimming team. So even not an individual sport. So we've seen this exclusion at every level, basically.
Sam, there's so much more you can talk about, but unfortunately we're out of time. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about it. We appreciate it. God bless.
Thank you.
Finally tonight, water and fountains have always been important symbols for Rome, and many of the water points are among the city's most well-known architectural works. But perhaps not as well-known is the deep spiritual meaning that they hold. EWTN Vatican journalist Magdalena Valinsky-Reedy has more.
You might not be surprised to learn that Rome has the most churches in the world. But did you know it also has the most fountains? It began with the rise of the Roman Republic and Empire. Over the course of 500 years, 11 aqueducts were constructed to supply ancient Rome with fresh water from outside sources. But once the empire fell, the aqueducts were largely neglected. That changed in the 15th century when Pope Nicholas V initiated the restoration of the only functioning aqueduct, the Aqua Virgo. As his successors continued the trend of reconstructing the old watercourses, they also started building impressive structures at the water's arrival points. Thus, The golden age of the Roman fountains began.
Starting from the early modern period, in the 16th century, the popes contributed to the construction of the city's magnificence, each one wanting to leave their own mark. These marks can be seen on the grand papal palaces on one hand, but also on the fountains.
The most famous one is the Trevi Fountain. The iconic landmark attracts thousands of visitors every day. At the very top of the 86-foot-high structure is the coat of arms of Pope Clement XII, one of the fountain's patrons. Until 1870, the Pope was not only head of the Church, but also the sovereign ruler of the Papal States. For this reason, the fountains evolved from being simple drinking water points to important symbols of the Church's power and prosperity.
On Piazza Navona, the great fountain of the Four Rivers reminds us of the greatness and universality of Catholicism. The statues represent the four great rivers in turn, representing Europe, Asia, Africa, and America, the four known continents on which the Pope had authority.
The Roman fountains also embody Christian truths with the aim at directing the minds and hearts of its onlookers toward heaven.
Symbolically and religiously, the water represents the water of baptism, the water used for purification in religious rites, symbolizing the rebirth of a Christian.
Despite their age, some aqueducts still function and provide modern-day Rome with water, such as the Acqua Vergine. With its 2,500 symbolic water fountains scattered across the city, Rome has certainly earned its nickname, the Queen of Water. In Rome, Magdalena Volinskariedi, EWTN News Nightly.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.